my name is Lily. Thanks for tuning in to Radio Pawikan, 1 hour of Philippine radio where we find out about Filipino culture and everything in between and what that means. Thanks for tuning in to 97.5 MHz. This is Radio Laura. Stay tuned.
Hello everyone, my name is Max. I'm sitting here today with Edna Becher, youth leader of the mass organization, the Philippine mass organization Onak Bayan. And Edna was not allowed into the country of the Philippines this morning. Edna, welcome to the program. Maybe you want to introduce yourself and tell us about what happened to you in the last 24 hours.
Hello, thanks for having me. So my name is Edna. I'm part of Anak Bayan, the mass youth organization from the Philippines. Anak Bayan Europe organizes the youth in the diaspora. And yeah, I left Switzerland on Wednesday noon, December 6th, and flew to Hong Kong and from Hong Kong to Manila. I was there to visit family and friends and to integrate with the basic masses, to meet some people from Anak Bayan Philippines, etc. And I was when I got to the immigration officer and that checks your passport, he took my passport. It didn't take a long time. He got up, told me to wait there, and he left. I already knew, like, okay, this isn't, something could be wrong, because they don't usually just get up and leave. And I was, like, looking out, waiting to see if, like, someone would bring police or anything like that. Thank God that didn't happen. So he came back. He was holding a piece of paper. It said, I couldn't see it. He was writing something down on it. So I kind of positioned myself to have a look. And it was, it said something on the top about a secondary investigation referral. So I figured, oh, okay, so I assume because of the name that I would be interrogated or asked questions, like it says secondary investigation. So I thought, okay, this isn't, like, this could still work out. So he got up, told me to follow him. Just a few meters away, there were some desks in the at the back corner. And he gave them my passport and this piece of paper and told me to wait on this bench. And so I waited there. There were other people also there that were being, not investigated, I guess you could say. So I was, so I had to wait for this to finish up. And then I saw them looking at my passport, writing some things. So these were other immigration officers by this time. They were looking at something on the screen. Someone pointed something to this other woman and they were like, oh, talking, and I couldn't hear because it was a bit far away. I was trying to hear, but I couldn't. And then the woman that had my passport, she got up and left with my passport. And I was like, okay, so maybe now the police will come. And I waited for a really long time. Nothing happened. Nobody told me anything. So at some point, I went to the other woman and asked her what the issue is. Why am I here? And she said that I was on their database. And I asked her, what does that mean, that I'm on your database? And she said, oh, there's a BLO against you. And I was like, what do you mean? And she said, that's a blacklisting order. And I asked, so I sat down again and I wasn't like, but then I went back up again and asked her what the reason was that I was on this blacklist. And she looked at the screen and said, well, here it says anti-government activities. And so I was like, oh, okay. And then I asked her, so blacklisting means that I can't remember if I asked her first what the reason was or if I first asked if that meant that I couldn't go in. Either way, I asked at some point if I that meant that I couldn't, that they wouldn't let me out. And she said, no, they couldn't let me out as long as the BLO stood, was standing. And unless it was lifted, they wouldn't be allowed to let me out. And I asked, so that means that I will have to go back. And she said, yes. And she told me that if I wanted to appeal it, I could only do that at the main office in Intramuros, in Manila. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so after that, I waited some more, and some employees from Cathay Pacific, or at least they were wearing lanyards from Cathay Pacific, came. They had my luggage with me. One of the guys actually sat down and was like, I'm actually not allowed to tell you this, but you're blacklisted. Do you know why? And I was like, oh, I know I'm blacklisted. I found out. And because he was saying that, you know, if I wanted to appeal, they could have arranged that they take me on a later flight, then I would have to just pay for this lounge thing to sleep there inside the airport. And but it would take a few days because there aren't a lot of Cathay Pacific flights going to Zurich, apparently. Mm. And so I talked to the lawyer. I told him that I would have to talk to the lawyer first. And upon the lawyer's advice, I decided to take the next flight, the one that was leaving at that moment, because of the risk of staying there and being interrogated by police or intelligence officers or something like this, and or being, yeah, imprisoned even or whatever. So it was better to leave for safety reasons. I also asked them if it was possible to stay in Hong Kong. And they said that that wasn't possible. They were not allowed. They had to bring me back to my point of origin, which was Zurich. Yes.
Mm, okay. So maybe before we get more into like the political aspect is and asking ourselves what it is with this blacklisting, because this is something very often happens to like organizers in the Philippines. Maybe we stick a bit to some more like the personal aspect of it, because so you're a Swiss Philippine woman, you wanted to go there, you wanted to visit your mother as well, and so on and so forth. So maybe you can explain us a bit how it was for you, like personally, when you were there and when they kind of investigated you and so on, like attached to your background and yeah, that you also have like, yeah, that you're like rooted in the Philippines.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in the Philippines. I grew up there for the first 10 years of my life, so I do consider it home in a way, of course. Yeah. And it was, I mean, at that moment, you know, you're just like, okay, I have to make sure, like, I have to be alert. What if police come? So it wasn't until later where the emotional side of things, I guess, kind of came to the forefront. At that point, I would say quite calm, and I was just trying to figure out, okay, what is the situation? And then trying to communicate with comrades here, with the lawyer, and figure out like the best course of action, and yeah, just see what could be done. Mm-hmm. And I think it was only later where, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, it's hard to put into words. So I think there are a lot of different factors that go into it. Yeah, there's the political aspect of wanting to go there, and what does it mean for politically that you're not able to go back to the country that you are fighting for, I guess. And then on the other side, of course, yeah, there's the family. There's like, you know, the place where you grew up, the I don't know, sounds and smells and everything that is so familiar and that you are not sure if you're gonna experience that ever again. Or yeah, when you will. And then of course the difficulty it is to explain that to your family, to your relatives there that are not political or not that don't know what it's like, you know, because it's actually a bit crazy when you think about it, like how normalized this kind of thing has become to people, for progressive people, for progressive forces, human rights advocates, activists, etc. It's like completely normal. I went into the Philippines knowing that this possibility would exist because I knew I had been red-tagged before, and I didn't know to what extent, or they knew about me, but I thought, okay, it's a possibility. And it's crazy to think how normalized that is and how we don't even question it, but every other person would be like, what is that? Oh my God, that's so crazy. What, like, they don't understand because it's a big thing. And which, yeah, it is. I mean, when you think about it, who is allowed to go? Like, it's crazy how activists helping people in the Philippines, helping the masses, doing political work, advocating for human rights, for justice, for peace, for a lot of different things, with good intentions, with their hearts in the right places, that are banned from coming back or banned from getting going inside the country. While on the other hand, we open it up to imperialists, to foreign investors, to U.S. military. I mean, the contrast is so, like, how can we open up this country talking about how they think they're protecting the country, or saying that they're protecting the country by not letting these people in. But what kind of people are they letting in? And what kind of forces? I think that's.
So now you're talking specifically about the practice of, like, red tagging foreign activists, but not only since the reactionary and fascist regime of Rodrigo Duterte, and especially now also under Bongbong Marcos, you have, like, this long continuation of red tagging of organizers and activists, as you said, of, like, human rights advocates, of church people, and so on. Of where they basically, as you said, criminalize people that try to be there for the Philippine masses and the working people, the peasantry, and so on and so forth. So maybe you can contextualize that a bit, like the politics of red tagging or, like, blacklisting.
We can't talk about red tagging or blacklisting without talking about the NTF-LCAC, the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict. It is a task force that was that it came to be during the Duterte regime. They've continuously gotten more and more funds, have continuously been able to take more and more liberties, or let's say in their practices, they basically start campaigns against activists, against human rights activists, against church people, against anyone with a progressive mindset that is critical of the government, that is critical of imperialism, that is fighting for justice and any kind of dissent, any kind of critical, any kind of critique, I guess, on the government is seen as, you know, oh, you're a communist, you're a terrorist. And that's, I think, completely unjustified and unfair and, I guess, and such an unjustified way of framing the kind of work that people are doing, the kind of good work that people are doing. But it is effective in that they have been able to raise a lot. There are a lot of trumped up charges that people, they make cases against people, they blacklist people, they red tag people that even if there is no case, you know, there are a lot of people that have seen their pictures everywhere that have gotten death threats, and it's not necessarily, and it's obvious that it's linked to the government, even if, you know, they kind of try to hide that. And I think I have to think.
I mean, exactly. Also from this red tagging, what you also have, you have a direct link to a lot of, like, in the end, extrajudicial killings. So you have like mass organizers, human rights advocates that are very popular and very well known. I remember the name of Eden Morgellano, maybe. She was a human rights advocate, and she was working a lot with the with indigenous communities, and she was part of a legal mass organization. And what happened to her was exactly that: she was red tagged, and through red tagging, in the end, she got into a fire of the Philippine military and was killed. So it was an extrajudicial killing without any arrest, without any judicial process, and so on.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So maybe for the end, we can talk a bit about what can be done in a case like this. What are the possibilities to organize now? How can you be supported, but not only you personally? How can we use this particular case, this particular example of you, to in general politicize and organize and mobilize around the issue of like red tagging of organizers and activists in the Philippines and abroad?
Yeah, I think this is just another opportunity to show people what is going on in the Philippines, to show them the kind of impunity that is dominant in the Philippines, and to once again call for abolishing the National Task Force, NTF-LCAC, and to call for justice for all of the wrongdoings that NTF-LCAC and other government officials have done to activists, to human rights advocates, lawyers, journalists, etc., and to demand justice for all of the extrajudicial killings as well that is still going on. Also the imprisonment of people, you know, the release of political prisoners as well. And yeah, I think it's just important to not stay quiet on this issue, to raise this issue, to talk about it, to make it known what is going on, and to organize, mobilize. Right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Edna. It was nice to have you here. And yeah, solidarity wishes and all the best.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to Radio Pawikan, powered by Radio Lola at 97.5 megahertz.
After our personal interview with Edna Becher, we're listening now to a media statement by the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines.
3 days before the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, a Filipino-Swiss youth activist was barred from entering the Philippines due to her inclusion in a blacklist order for alleged anti-government activities. Anak Bayan Europe's Edna Becher had been forced to return to Switzerland after being held at the Philippine airport and subjected to secondary investigation by immigration officers on 7 December 2023. Edna Becher is the first activist of Filipino descent from Switzerland to be denied entry to the Philippines. Her blacklisting is also the first known incident under Arcos Jr. regime. The International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines Europe chapter strongly condemns the unjustified treatment and baseless blacklisting of the young activist by the Filipino government. The ambiguous reason of anti-government activities reveals the Marcos administration's policy of intolerance against those who oppose and criticize its anti-poor, anti-masses policies. This incident also attests to the intensifying crackdown on activists and other human rights defenders in the Philippines. ICHRP Europe demands for the removal of Edna and other Filipino activists in the Philippine government's blacklist order. ICHRP Europe further calls for a swift investigation into the maltreatment suffered by Edna during the hours-long ordeal. Hands off all human rights defenders. Stop the attacks.
Humayot, lumaya, lagutin ang tanikala. Bawiin mo ang buhay at ang dangal na pinagkait. Humayot. Bawiin mo.